Hi, everybody. This is Ben Starr with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Ideas, concepts, and guests. And today is a special day in the American calendar. It's Veterans Day. So the idea and the concept are veterans, and that's why we thought here at The Positive Mind that it would be great to have some veterans on as guests and hear about their experiences. So joining me in the studio here, I have two veterans of the United States Marine Corps who are going to tell us a little bit about what that was like for them. And it's interesting because our first guest, George, served in the Marine Corps in 1967 and 1968, and he served a combat tour of duty in Vietnam. Our other guest, Kyle, served 40 years later in Iraq in 2007. And I thought that two guys from New York with similar geographic backgrounds but different generational experiences would give us a little bit of perspective on what it means to be a veteran and today's topic. So, guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. First, I want to start with you, George. You were deployed in Vietnam in a very difficult period of the war. Tell me a little bit about how you first got into the Marine Corps. Were you enlisted? You were drafted? How did that work?
I graduated college in 1966 and received my draft notice and went up for my physical in Cleveland, Ohio. I was in school in Ohio at the time, and got reclassified 1A and was told I would be drafted in a matter of months. So I went across the hall and the Marine Corps was there and I signed up in the Marine Corps.
So the Marine Corps was a choice rather than getting drafted and being assigned somewhere where you might not have as much control over.
Right. I was a college graduate, so it was either in the Army for 3 years if I wanted to be an officer, or in the Army for 2 years, or in the Marine Corps for 3 years as an officer, or in the Navy for four, and the Air Force for four. So I was probably going to go in for 3 years, so I went in the Marine Corps. I knew I was going to Vietnam, and Vietnam was really ramping up. So my choice was to go with the Marine Corps rather than the Army.
And what was there any particular reason that you felt the Marine Corps was a more attractive option?
Well, the Marine Corps, you know, a lot of people from my neighborhood, I was in a working class neighborhood. The Marines were not an alien force. You know, there was a lot of people joined the Marine Corps. My brother-in-law was in the Marine Corps. His brother was in the Marine Corps. I had friends that had joined the Marine Corps before me. So, you know, the Marine Corps is made up of working class people. And if you're from a working class neighborhood, it's like I said, it's not an alien force.
So it was something familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you, Kyle? You enlisted in the Marine Corps.
Yeah. So I enlisted right out of high school. I heard a lot about Marines growing up, essentially. I mean, I grew up in Levittown, which was town built for returning war veterans, and so all of my neighbors, you know, like the whole neighborhood was just, there were vets in people's families, and you always heard stories about it. So, you know, my neighbor two houses down, her name was Dottie, and her husband was a Marine Corps, World War II Marine Corps vet, and I used to just go over, you know, to her house. She was always sitting on her porch, and I don't know, we would just talk about really very little things, but it was just this kind of influence that made me decide I wanted to be a Marine.
Now, the both of you ended up serving in deeply unpopular wars. Did you feel effects of that as far as how you related to what was happening in the war, or how you related to people that were back home stateside?
Look, I think you get into a microcosm of the world you're in. The Marine Corps is all-consuming. I mean, and you become a Marine. You become part of an elite group. I mean, it sounds very trite, but you know, ours is but to do or die. In other words, you will accomplish a mission. And Marines are not to reason why. I mean, they are. You know, I hate to pat ourselves on the back, but it is an elite fighting force. It's probably one of the best in the world, if not the best. So I think you really kind of put out of your head, you know, what else is going on. I mean, you have to survive, and you want to make sure all your buddies survive.
Sure.
And that's what it's about.
Well, the reason I ask is because we certainly, in the Vietnam era, we hear a lot about returning vets who had a hard time with people's reactions to the fact that they served. And I think that was more so the case then than it was, I guess, in your experience, Kyle, coming home from Iraq. We read a lot of stories about guys getting spit on, for example, when they landed in the airport, and how that may have affected them. So I'm just wondering how, after the experience, how did it shape your outlook on the world and on life?
Well, I never knew anyone that got spit on. I mean, when you flew, I was stationed in California when I got back, and I lived in New York. My parents were in New York. So when you fly, you had to fly in uniform. And the Marines don't fly the way the Army flies with their jungle utilities on and things. You fly in your green uniform, mm-hmm. You know, your dress uniform. So I was well treated by the people on the airlines. I always got great seats and sometimes first class if there was room. But when I got to Kennedy Airport, I would change into my civilian clothes in the bathroom and take my uniform off. I never got spit on. I think it was more of a people really didn't care that you were in the military more than they disliked you.
Sure.
I mean, I didn't hang around with kids, you know, the hippies at the time, so I really didn't run into it much.
Well, I'm wondering how you've seen those attitudes change, because you mentioned people didn't really care. But that seems to have changed today as far as the collective consciousness of the country. There seems to be much more of a welcoming and supporting feeling towards returning vets than there may have been back then.
Well, I think in the late 80s, I mean, I think they did the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., and they did one in New York City, and then they had a homecoming parade down Broadway. I mean, there's a lot of flag waving, and I see it today as well. You know, the Walmart has a program of putting a green light on and everything else. But the bottom line has not changed, and it hasn't changed since the Revolutionary War. Veterans are not treated, I mean, they may get patted on the back, and people may be there applauding when they get off the plane, but the benefits they get and the care they get is just as bad as it was from World War II to Korea to Vietnam to Iraq. They don't care. I mean, you may get a flag waving and they may say, thank you, and I put this in quotes, thank you for your service.
Right.
But do they do anything for you? No.
So it's a superficial thing.
Yeah, and I do a lot of work with the Semper Fi Fund, which is Marines taking care of Marines. It's like the Wounded Warrior Fund. And these young guys, like Kyle and his friends that came home, they get just as bad a care as we do. There's still urine stains in the veterans' hospitals, and they still have trouble getting their benefits, and they still get disregarded. So I really don't think this country likes to send everybody off to war, but they really don't like to take care of the people that do the fighting.
And that's something important that I think a lot of veterans and non-veterans would like to see addressed. It's almost like you said, it's a superficial, I'm going to slap a magnet on the back of my car, and I've done my part, right?
Yeah.
But where, and Kyle, I'm wondering if you have a perspective on this that you wanted to share, but what do you think is, at least for this current generation of veterans that you're a part of, what is the biggest challenge that you're facing as a group?
Well, for the enlisted, a lot of us don't have degrees when we enlist, right? That's why we're enlisted versus being an officer. So when we get out, it's a much more challenging, it's challenging trying to find work and also deal with many of the issues that came up during your service. So, you know, the VA has never been very quick to help people. And when you get stressed out to such a high level and then you get out, you are almost overwhelmed with feelings that you have, like things that you have to take care of, you know, and they don't really do a very good job helping you take care of whatever issues you may have.
have you been able to apply some of the skills and jobs you did while you were active duty to helping you find work here back home?
No.
No.
No, I was an avionics electrician.
Okay.
So the Marines are known for getting hand-me-downs from, you know, the Air Force and the Navy, and a lot of the equipment that we worked on is just, it's not modern, so fixing that kind of equipment, it's just not something that's really so available.
So it's a lot of obsolete things you're learning about. Is that what you mean?
I'm learning, you know, the GPS, for example, that we worked on was about, I don't know, it's 2 feet long, 1 foot wide, and 1 foot high, you know, and now we have GPS that are
inside our phones.
Yeah, in your palm, yeah. And it'll tell you where the nearest McDonald's is, too.
It reminds me of when you see them in the pictures in the 50s of them wheeling those computers into trucks, and it's got 4 megabytes of storage on it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it takes 10 guys to wheel it up into a truck.
You know, we were still using multimeters and stuff to run up our equipment and at the time, anyways. And, you know, now you can just plug in the electronics into computers, and it'll diagnose itself, you know. So,
but that, I've heard that about the military in general, is that they're not, you know, they're always like a generation behind. So the machines and the equipment and the computer equipment that they're working on is not the same equipment that you'll find Google and Microsoft working on. So when guys get out, or women get out with this skill set, they're really not equipped.
Right.
And, you know, the VA is not there to help you in that regard. They're really, I think you see it with disabilities for today's veterans the same way you had disabilities for veterans of mine. So I think the same problems occur over and over and over again for veterans, and I don't see any fix in sight. So,
if I understand correctly, every Marine has an occupational specialty that they work on while they're in.
An MOS, it's called.
Right. And so Kyle said you were an electrician.
Yep.
Avionics electrician?
Correct.
George, what were you doing?
I was in infantry.
Infantry. And that was basically out in the field seeing combat on a daily basis, or?
No. I think they actually, the phrase is, you know, 10 hours of pure boredom with 10 seconds of sheer terror. But, you know, it's a, you know, locate, close with, and destroy is the mission. And basically you have to locate first. So, you know, there's a lot of Marines patrol all the time, and that's what they do. So, or you're on, depending on where you are, is the size of the operation you're on. Sometimes you're on a very large operation, and you're just a small piece of it. Sometimes you're on a company size, which is like 200-man operation, and you're a big part of it. And sometimes you're on a platoon operation, and you're the only one in charge. And sometimes you have lance corporals and corporals running patrols, and they're in charge. So I think the thing that I think the military does teach you is how to trust other people to do what they're supposed to do. You know, I don't micromanage people, and I'm sure Kyle has the same feeling. You come out and they say, well, can you work with these three guys? And you kind of look at them and laugh and say, of course, that's what we do, you know. So, but people don't understand that, you know. So,
when you look at a young guy like Kyle, who went through a lot of the same training as you and was part of the same organization, the Marine Corps, do you see yourself in him, or do you see guys that you served with? Do you get a feeling about guys who were in the Marines?
You know, the Marine Corps is a family. It's probably the best. I always call it, you know, the way Princeton and Yale have this network of Yaleys and people that were.
Right.
I call the Marine Corps the working man's Princeton.
Right.
I mean, if you're in the Marine family, you help another Marine no matter what happens. And yes, when I look at him, I see guys that I serve with, and I see a brother.
Sure.
So it's, we were kind of chuckling, and you're a Marine. It's, and part of the real difficulty when I was in was we all got back. I got back at the end of 68, and there was a lot of racial tension in the country, and it kind of permeated a lot of what was going on. And I've since gone to a reunion, and some of the guys said, you know, Johnson and I were stationed in Lejeune together, Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, and we couldn't talk to each other anymore Meanwhile, they had slept together and, you know, fought together. I don't think that's as much today, but, you know, those, you know, you have this bond and they, like, look at each other and say, man, I'd like to talk to you, but there's so much social pressure going on.
Right.
We can't hug.
Well, we should tell our listeners, since this is radio and there's no visual aspect, but George is white, Kyle's black, and George just talked about experiencing racial tensions at large in the country. Kyle, did you experience that in the Marine Corps, racial tensions or difficulties based around race?
It's kind of a loaded question because I feel like there were certain racial tensions, but at the same time, it wasn't. It didn't really play a factor in anything. So, one of the things that I think George was talking about was how you mix with certain people that you may not have under any other circumstance, and that was something that was very prevalent in the Marine Corps. Was, you know, I look at some of the guys and I'm like, you know, if we weren't both Marines, I probably never would have talked to you.
Like, give me an example.
I mean,
there's a lot of people from the South in the Marines.
Yeah, exactly.
So you get guys from Oklahoma and Arkansas probably never talked to a black man in their life.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm talking 40 years later, but I'm sure it's the same thing. And all of a sudden, they got to work with him and help him with his pack and drink out of the same canteen.
Absolutely. Huh? It's like
never happened.
I've had this one. I've got to be careful with what I say because we're on the air. So. He said, Gilchrist, before I met you, I hated black people, but now I kind of like them. And it was such an odd, it was very sincere, and I don't think he understood that he was being kind of insulting, but, you know, I understood that it was genuine, and... regardless of what happens, it's like we have each other's back, and that's the amazing thing there in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look kind of at the history, I mean, a lot of that happened in World War II, you know, like Pee Wee Reese respecting Jackie Robinson, probably because he met other black men in the military and realized that, you know, hey, it depends on who the person is, not...
You know, so in a way, it's the great equalizer when someone puts on that uniform.
Yeah, we're all green.
Yeah, we're all green. Yeah, especially in the Marine Corps because it's such a small unit. I mean, there's only 180,000 Marines as it is now. So, you know, you're in a pretty elite club. So when I look at Kyle and he was a Marine, he's like, oh, I know he can take care of business if he needs to.
Right.
And he knows I'm the same way, and he knows... if he has to turn his back, I can stand behind him and back him up, and he'll do the same for me. So, I mean, it's just kind of an elite club.
Sure. Ben Starr with you here on The Positive Mind. It's a Veterans Day special. We're talking with George Olson and Kyle Gilchrist, former Marines who served combat tours exactly 40 years apart. And that's why we wanted to bring them on the program today, hear a little bit about their different experiences, what was similar, what was different, and talk about what today means, what it is to be a veteran here in the United States. I'm wondering, when you first came home, what were those first few months like readjusting from a combat zone, a war zone, to coming home to peacetime? What was that like for you mentally, emotionally?
Well, I didn't adjust probably for 8 or 10 years. It took quite a while. I think there's a theory. I mean, I think, you know, you go through experiences that no one else has gone through. Thus, you hang out with other people that have been through similar experiences that you don't have to fill in the blanks for them.
Sure.
And even if you fill in the blanks for somebody that hasn't done it, you can't explain it.
Right.
So it took me a long, long time to adjust. Probably... I got home from Vietnam the end of 68, and I would say probably not till around 1980. I felt probably about 10 or 12 years where I finally felt like, okay, I'm kind of got my feet back on the ground. I always say I lost 10 years because of the war.
How about you, Kyle? What was that experience like?
Well, when I got out, I started going to school, but I wasn't really mentally prepared for it. I was still dealing with a lot of things. So basically, I moved to Asia, got involved in other things like martial arts, and spent a long time meditating and trying to figure out, like, work through these things. And I'd say now I'm pretty normal now.
How long have you been back from Asia?
About a year now, just about a year. So I got out in 2009, and I moved back to New York last year, essentially. So
I'm wondering, what was it like for you both to go, you know, halfway around the world, or all the way around the world? I guess Vietnam is all the way around the world, and be, you know, thrown into a completely new environment, both the physical environment and the cultural environment. Was that a learning experience? Was there an adjustment there when you first went out?
I didn't really feel that there was much of an adjustment. It sort of just happens over time. I recall once I got there, it was nice to be on the ground again, because the flight wasn't the most comfortable thing. And then when I got there, it was odd being in the desert, that's for sure. You know, all I remember from Kuwait was that it was so bright. It was like the sun was, like, bouncing off of the ground and directly into your eyes. You couldn't see anything. And it's very monochromatic. And just over, I don't know. I think my expectations were sort of met by what I saw there. So I wasn't really shocked, you know.
How about the jungle, George?
The jungle is a strange place. I mean, a lot of Vietnam is not jungle. It's rice paddy and open fields, and every different environment has its own tactical differences and difficulties. Initially, I was in the southern part. The Marines were up in what's called I Corps, which was like from Da Nang to the demilitarized zone. So, I mean, I was in the southern part of that zone. And the northern part was the caissons and the Hills 881s. And I was around Da Nang and Way City and things like that. So the kind of environment was a little different. One was very mountainous. Mine was a lot more rice paddy and mountains. But your interaction with the people when you first get there, of course, is hostile. And then after you get to kind of know the people, you really start to get an affection for them. They really, the Vietnamese are very warm people, and you know the difference between the Chinese and the Koreans and the Vietnamese. And to me, they used to all be just Asian. And then when you're there, you kind of really start differentiating who's who, and culturally and looks wise and everything else. I have a very great fondness for the Vietnamese people, besides the fact that we were antagonistic to each other at times, but a lot of times we were not. We were working together. So, but it is an interesting experience being in a combat environment among a civilian population.
After you left Vietnam, the next really major, I think, conflict that happened would be, what would you say, the first Gulf War?
Yeah, I mean, except a grenade or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
But yeah, the first Gulf War.
And then eventually Afghanistan and the second Gulf War, right. And the second war in Iraq. How did you feel as a veteran, and at that point having, you know, several years between your service and what was going on at the time, in the run-ups to those wars, were you, did that give you, did you think back on your own experience? Did you draw off of that? Did it inform your views on that?
Well, I my father said to me when I was young, and I didn't realize it until I was home from Vietnam, if you want to stop war, you start the draft at age 55. Because
the guys voting are
should be, you know, there's no one in Congress has their sons
or
daughters. No one in Congress has their sons and daughters in harm's way.
Right.
They cut school funding. They cut. They raise tuitions at the state level. Where's somebody supposed to go? there's only one place to go that's left open, and that's the military, and that's what they want. And then they have, you know, everybody rattles sabers and everything else. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, John McCain's not a veteran unless he has mud and blood on him. You weren't down there and seeing what goes on and what the real tragedies of war are, both to our people and the people that we fight, then you really don't have anything to say as far as I'm concerned.
Interesting. So what do you think, do you think that's politicized a lot? Do you think people use that as a, use that for political points?
Yeah, I mean, Chris Christie, oh, you know, I'm going to show the Russians over Syria. Well, you know what? You didn't go. You know, you had a chance to go. Why didn't you go?
Right.
You know, that's what I asked. That's the question I would ask. Well, you had a chance to go fight when you were younger. Why didn't you join the military? Yep. But, you know, you want Kyle to go fight now for you. You know, you want the kid down the street to go fight, but your son's not going to go fight. So, you know what? Let's kind of personalize these things a little bit more. So young guys like Kyle can come home and not have to go to Asia and try and figure out where he is and what he's doing in his life and try and get them educated and let them, you know, we don't do that. And it's the same thing goes back to our respect for the veterans. Wave all the flag and put the bumper stickers on you want. But if you're not willing to pay to take care of these kids, then, you know, don't send them anywhere.
Yeah, it's a good point, George. And I think to remember between... between senators and Congress, representatives and House of Congress, there's something like 530, 540 people. And I think combined, of those who voted for Iraq, only one child in the military combined of all those people. And it just goes back to your point that the people oftentimes who are, you know, starting these conflicts are not the ones who have to deal with the very real human cost.
Yeah, and if you provide no opportunity for somebody that comes out of a working class family, and there's, you know, community colleges are expensive and state schools are expensive and we don't give them a great high school education, and there's no intermediate level to get them so they can go to community college, and there's no employment out there, there's only one place to go, and you see all the ads on every football game and every basketball game, you know, go into the military to get a career, and that's what's open to them.
Yeah, just last night I saw an ad on TV for that. So it's true. That is, it's pretty prevalent in our media. We see it a lot.
I mean, the Marine Corps at least tells you what you're getting. I mean, you don't see any ads in there about going getting a career. It's basically you want to go in and blow down doors. But yeah. I'm not being complimentary to the Marine Corps, but at least they tell you what you're getting into.
So yeah. What about GI bills? How did you experience that? I know you both have an experience around that. It was a little bit different for each of you. How did you benefit from those things?
Well, I was the one of the first group to get the post 9/11 GI bill. So,
and tell our listeners a little bit about what that means.
So there, the GI bill before that, they would give you a certain amount of money that would go towards your tuition, and instead with the post 9/11 GI bill, they would cover your tuition at a public school and also give you a housing allowance. So you know, I came out and pretty much tried to take advantage of that right when I got out, but I don't think I got my first check until 4 months after I'd started school, and it was brutal. It was like, how, you know, I'm coming out relying on this thing, you know, I'm doing paperwork with the VA for, you know, other related things, and just nothing happened. It was like I was pretty much starving and stuck, and then I was like, it just it makes you think about all of the things that are going on. It's just it was difficult, really, to put it plainly.
How about you? How'd you deal with the GI Bill, George?
Well, it didn't come for a couple of months. We just got a check, $235 a month, and that was that. I went back to school, to graduate school, and you got $235. So you basically, you have to work almost full time. So to put yourself through school.
I'm wondering, and you can both relate to this.
And you're pretty messed up at the time.
Yeah.
So it's like you're just kind of fumbling through the whole process.
Falling forward.
Right.
George, you've seen a lot more of this just because of the time that's passed, but Kyle, you've started to see this in the last few years, and I wager you'll see more of it in the coming years. A lot of representation of these conflicts in popular culture, specifically in Hollywood, with movies that come out and show some aspects of the war. So there have been obviously many more concerning Vietnam than Iraq, but we've started to see in recent years more and more films discussing Iraq and, mm-hmm. and depicting what that was like. What is it like for you when you see these movies? Do you feel they do a disservice by painting a sort of storybook picture of it? Do some of them get it right? How does it feel for you when you see these movies?
I've only seen one. I don't read any of the famous books about Vietnam, and I don't go to any of the movies. My wife had took me to Platoon because she heard it was like the most realistic depiction of it. And parts of it were. I mean, you know, I always say, you know, they show you 5 minutes of somebody sitting in the rain at night, and I said, what you really need to do is do it for a month and a half. and then you get the feel for it. You know, you don't get it in 5 minutes.
Right.
I don't see any of it. I don't go to see any of it. Never saw Saving Private Ryan.
So you make a conscious choice to not consume that kind of media.
Yeah, it's not what I want to see.
Not interesting to you.
Yeah, I mean, I've you know, when you live it, you don't want to see it again.
Sure. What do you think?
Yeah, I generally don't follow it too much either. I did see American Sniper, though, and that one seemed pretty realistic. Let me see. Before that, though, I generally watch bits and pieces of movies when I see them on television, and there's always things that I can nitpick about, and it's just I don't think they often capture the essence of what people feel and what life is like when they're in combat zone.
Does it feel like maybe they're trying to profit off of these?
It's Hollywood.
I mean,
yeah, it's you know, it's we live in a system like that.
Yeah.
You tuned into a special edition of The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI. It's a Veterans Day special, taking a short musical break. After the break, we'll be taking your calls. Hoping to hear from veterans and families of veterans today at 212-757-5555.
Blue skies, please go away. A girl has found another and gone away. With her went my future. My life is filled with gloom. So day after day, I stay locked up in my room. I know to you, sounds strange, but I wish it would rain. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Cause so badly, I wanna go outside. But everyone knows that a man ain't supposed to cry. Listen, I gotta cry, cause crying. Wish it would rain. Oh, let it rain. Rain, rain, rain. Let it rain. Oh, yeah. Let it rain. Stained face, pressed against the window pane. My eyes search the skies, desperately for rain. Cause raindrops behind my teardrop, and no one will ever know that I'm crying, crying. While I go outside to the world outside my tears, I refuse to explain. Oh, I wish it would rain. Let it rain.
The Temptations' I Wish It Would Rain was the number one single on the R&B charts in 1968, and that was the year that George was in Vietnam. He picked that song himself for our musical break today. We're talking about Veterans Day. We were just speaking with George and Kyle. George had to leave us during the break for a scheduled appointment, but we still have Kyle here in the studio. Kyle, thanks for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to talk to you, and we're going to be taking some listener phone calls here. We'd love to hear from veterans or families of veterans or anyone with a question for Kyle. The number to call is 212-757-5555. So, Kyle, let me ask you something. When you hear people say things like, thank you for your service, is that something you appreciate? Do you like hearing that? Does it feel patronizing? How is that for you?
I don't know. I mean, generally, if someone's going out of their way to say something nice to you, then, you know, I take it for what it's worth. But I think I don't know that they know exactly what they're thanking us for, really. You know, they don't really understand the experience that we've gone through. So, I don't know. It's a bit odd.
It is, huh?
Yeah, a little bit.
And what about while you were there? Was how important was it getting mail for you from family and friends back home? Was that something you looked forward to?
Getting mail was something you always look forward to. So it's just a surprise, you know. You know, you're just wondering every day if you have something. Then you have something, and then you gotta go open it and read it, and it's, I don't know, it's comforting.
Yeah, because I've heard from many vets that's something really special and really anticipated and looked forward to when they're out there. We're going to start taking phone calls from listeners out there. Again, the number to call is 212-757-5555. We have a caller on the line right now. Steve, thanks for calling in.
Hi, I'm a forensic psychiatrist, and I go back to Vietnam era, and I'll give you a brief history of how I'm a sort of veteran. I was in the Army for a short while, but I was conscious objector to it on the grounds that the military was being distorted, the medical corps was being distorted from being there to help people to rather maintain the fighting strength of the Army and get people back into fighting condition. And after I came out, I worked with the American Psychiatric Association developing an understanding and the establishment of the post-traumatic stress disorder.
Sure, that's
classification,
a big...
Which, and I guess there are lots of questions, but what I'm wondering is whether or not, and too bad the other fellow left, whether or not somehow by that being registered, there was some recognition of the problems that the veterans had as a result of the war that was being recognized, at least at some level, by a major element of the society.
Well, I'm sure Kyle could weigh in on that. I know before he had to leave, George mentioned that he, you know, it took him a good decade to get back
right,
on his feet.
Because he said 1980, and that's exactly when it entered into the DSM classification.
Okay. Yeah, so Kyle, what did you think about PTSD as far as how it's been addressed by the military, by healthcare providers? Was that something that you personally grappled with or had friends in the service grapple with?
Yeah, I think it's something that most people have to deal with when they're in a highly stressful environment. You know, and it's really not, this isn't like a new phenomenon. Like, we've known about PTSD for thousands of years. It's just been called different things. So.
Right, like in World War One, they called it shell shock.
Yeah, shell shock, you know, so.
And it was a war trauma in World War Two, you know. Yeah. But it was kept only to the military, and it disappeared afterwards. You know, and just one more comment. You talked about people thanking you. What they're really, I think, thanking you for is taking their fears and their anxieties and whatever else goes into it, and that you took it and did something about it for them. What the reality was is not what it's about. It's about their feeling that somebody's out there protecting them.
It's a great point, Steve. Thanks so much for the call.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you, Steve.
Okay, thank you.
212-757-5555. That's 212-757-5555. The number to call. I'd love to hear some more from veterans, families of veterans, loved ones, husbands and wives of veterans, and weigh in on this Veterans Day, November 11th, 2015. Did you have any moral crisis, Kyle, while you were over there? Were there things that sort of challenged your views or your feelings about right and wrong?
It was like a very difficult question to answer on the air, especially without really thinking about it first. But there were definitely you really just go and you do your job and you do what you're told to. And, you know, there was no moral quandary with that at all. But, you know, after coming back, that's when I really started to think about, you know, politics more, I guess. And like,
sure,
what got us to the place where we were fighting other people, you know, in a country so far away.
Well, let's take another call. Kevin's on the line. Kevin, thank you for calling in.
Yes, I was just calling to ask a question. I wanted to know, did you actually know exactly what you were fighting for? Like, was it like, did you feel like you were fighting for a cause? I know, like, for democracy or to protect the homeland. And did that change at any point while you were there?
So I was fighting for America. That was pretty much how, you know, I justified things in my head. And I didn't really have any problem doing that until I started thinking about it more once I returned home. It wasn't until afterwards that I was really starting to question things a lot more. But up to that point, it was, you know, I felt like I was doing a job that someone had to do, and, you know, I did that, you know.
Thank you. Have your point of view changed under the current political environment? As we see that war is becoming commonplace and there's a lot of profiteering, have your point of view changed now in retrospect as to the reason for the military?
Mine certainly have. I'm not speaking on behalf of all veterans, obviously, but my personal opinions of things has changed significantly.
Okay, thank you for that, and God bless.
Thanks for the call, Kevin. Appreciate it.
All right, you're welcome.
212-757-5555. That's 212-757-5555 is the number to call. Talking with Kyle Gilchrist, United States Marine Corps veteran. Kyle, what were the years that spanned your service?
It's 2005 to 2009.
Okay, so 4 years, right in sort of the heart of the war in Iraq, Operation Iraqi Freedom.
Yep.
And did you... You mentioned you had been an avionics mechanic.
Electrician.
Tell us a little bit about what that was like and what your role was.
So pretty much we fixed all the electronic equipment that went on planes and helicopters. And in the Marine Corps is known as the tip of the spear, so everything they do has to do with attacking things, essentially. So all of the planes and helicopters that we worked on, it was just like I worked a lot of on like a lot of communications boxes, you know, GPS we were talking about before, like certain indicators, like even walkie-talkies, sometimes night vision goggles, these kinds of things.
So a lot of technical stuff, a lot of fixing and tinkering and learning electronics components.
Yeah, there was, I had quite a bit of, you know, training to learn how to fix all of this equipment. It was, you know, they send you to a few different bases, and it took, you know, probably close to a year and 3 months to learn how to fix this equipment.
Let's take a few more calls. We are hoping to hear from veterans and families of veterans today, or anyone with questions for Kyle. Unfortunately, George had to go during the break. Luz is on the line. Luz, thanks for calling in.
Yes, hi. Let me. I have one question. Like, I have one son who wants to go into the Navy, But seeing the way that Americans treat our soldiers when they come back, where they don't have any psychological support or any economical support, I'm telling my son not to do it. What is the point? Yeah, we defend it. We go, we fight, we fight for our country, we love our country. But what is our country doing for us?
Well, I think, Luz, as George said, that there really is a lack of support and services for returning veterans. Kyle, do you want to shed some more light on that?
It's difficult. I feel like I'm always in an odd place when I get these kinds of questions because, you know, I love our country, I love American people, and I'm pretty much against war. So, you know, there's parts of me that likes the military. There's, you know, it's a lot of life experience in a very short amount of time, you know, and that I can honestly say I think is beneficial really to anyone. You also learn things like how to be disciplined and how to work with other people. You meet lots of people, you see lots of things. There's a lot of experience. It's just the war.
But then when you go there, you lose your arm, you lose your leg, you come back, you are not the same person psychologically neither.
Right. So then, there's also a cost to it as well, and that's the cost, and the way we deal with those things back home is not satisfactory, in my opinion. So, you know, there are benefits to it. You know, it's
I know it's a personal decision. Today, especially when you're celebrating this day, the Veterans Day, and my son could be a veteran later on, and he's going to be treated the way I see people being treated. It's just like, I am not all.
Yeah, Luz, I agree. There's a lot of people out there who are not happy with the way that our veterans have been received, and I think it's something that we all need to address as a society and demand answers for. Demand answers from you know, people running the show, people in politics. Luz, I want to thank you for the call. We do want to squeeze a couple more calls in before the end of the show, but thank you, Luz, and best of luck to your son. 212-757-5555 is the number to call. It's a Veterans Day special edition of The Positive Mind, and we'd love to take another call or two. If you could call in, 212-757-5555. If you're a veteran, if you're related to a veteran, if you have questions for Kyle, who served overseas in Iraq, it is one of those things, you know, it's a touchy subject. And Kyle, I completely understand you're having mixed feelings on it. I think many Americans do. Yeah. And yet, at the same time, taking the politics out of it, because I think a lot of this is very politicized. It's like George mentioned. There are many people who are left with very few options for a constructive, positive path, but to join the military. And that's, you know, that's the product of our, you know, social and economic system. And I don't think that those people are at fault for, you know, having to take that path,
right,
if that's what they want or need to do. Let's try to take a couple more calls here. We have Ray on the line. Ray, thank you for calling in.
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
How are you, Ray?
Good, good. Yeah, I was in during Vietnam. I was in the Air Force, and I joined because everybody was getting drafted in my neighborhood, and I knew I was going to go, and so I said, let me go in the Air Force, you know, because I was not into fighting or anything like that. I just, even though, let me say one thing. When you're young, you have you're talking about people who are 18 years old, 20 years old. It's a different perspective than if you're 40 or 45 or something like that. And so you haven't had a chance, I don't think, to think through a lot of these political things. You know, I had lived through the civil rights era. I had seen that. And then, you know, all the anti-war stuff and everything. And I went in, I think, how old was I? I was like 19 years old. You don't have a chance at that time to form a lot of things. So like Kyle was saying, if you have a mission or something, you just do it. You're not really thinking about the political ramifications about it, of it, until maybe you get a chance to reflect on it after you come back.
Yeah, but it was. I remember specifically too. It was one of my drill instructors that said, "Don't get involved in politics because there's nothing you can really do about it, anyways. At this point, like you're in the military, so you know if you form a political opinion about something and you're at war, it's like, you know, too bad, kind of, you know."
Right. I mean, you're there. You're in the middle of it, and you just have to respond to the situation. But I wanted to ask you, how have you found the job situation? How long have you been out now?
I've been out since 2009, so the job situation is pretty tough. I'm in school now, so when I got out, I started going to school. Wasn't working out too well. I mean, I was doing well in school, but not well for myself.
Right.
And then I moved to Asia, and I worked a bit there. I trained a lot of martial arts, and I just really thought about my life a lot while I was there. And now I'm back coming to school. And before I was, I managed to save some money while I was working in Asia. So coming back home was not easy. I pretty much blew through all my savings until I started school again, basically. So it's been pretty tough.
Would you consider going back to Asia to live permanently?
Yeah. I mean, there's lots of opportunities everywhere, you know, so I wouldn't rule that out.
Right.
Ray, it's always good to hear from you. I appreciate the call. We're going to try to get one more in today, but thanks again for calling.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
212-757-5555 is the number to call. 212-757-5555. Hopefully you can take one more quick call. You're listening to The Positive Mind. I'm Ben Starr. In the studio with me, Kyle Gilchrist, United States Marine Corps veteran. We're doing a special edition Veterans Day program just to hear from veterans and families of veterans. And, you know, this is a real American experience that a lot of people have had, and that that needs to be discussed in a rational way. And I think much of the discussion is often very knee-jerk on either side, right? It's either very negative or very sort of rah-rah. But the reality is, it's much more nuanced than that, right? And it's important to hear different perspectives, and that's why we're doing this. And we want to take one more quick call. Eldwin, you're on the line.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello, hello.
I'm actually a veteran, too, also.
I'll simplify.
I was also on the wing, and I got deployed in Iraq and all that good stuff. But I just wanted to make the point that I agree with you with how there's no central way of tracking our veterans, which is a big thing, because the amount of, when I got back, I didn't know what I was supposed to do or where to even start. They give you those classes, and then they kind of just let you do it.
Yeah.
So, right? They
yeah,
just give you
yeah,
the class, and they let you loose, and you're stuck.
You're like,
so,
now what?
Yeah, you say, now what? And you're trying to figure out what to do. Like, I myself, I have been out for about 5 years now, and I've never been to the VA. I've never been to the VA downtown in the city. Just because I've tried to call, tried to figure it out, and the lines are so long that you're waiting months and months at a time just to get a simple checkup.
Yep.
So that is something that I believe that needs to be taken care of and just rethought, because there are so many other places that we can at least attempt to install, you know, someone like a VA rep, so that way more people have more access to this kind of thing. Because the amount of spaces that we have in this city is just not enough for the amount of veterans that we have coming back. We're getting veterans coming back every single day, so it's kind of it's a losing fight. That's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, the services are just inadequate.
Yeah. Eldwin, thank you so much for the call, man. We're coming right up to the end of the show, but happy Veterans Day. Thanks for calling in. I agree with you. We do need to improve services for returning veterans. So thanks again, Eldwin.
All right. Thank you. Good one.
You too.
This has been a special Veterans Day issue episode of The Positive Mind. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Thank everyone who called in. Kyle, thank you for being here.
You're welcome, you know.
Thank you to George, although he couldn't be here for the second half of the program. And we'll be back next Tuesday at 1 p.m. right here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Happy Veterans Day, everybody.